Welcome back to the Groups Matter podcast show. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt for episode, and Chris, this is landmark, episode 35.
35, baby. We're handing out the t-shirts.
It's my favorite time of the week. Podcast day. Best time of the week. Four months.
There's nothing better, and we're in the month of what?
Nothing better now. We're on record as not being prone to overstatement, so just remember that. Nothing better.
That's true.
That covers a lot of ground. And we are honored to be joined today by the person that I only refer to as the one and only, Eddie Mosley. Chris, I think you've known Eddie for a long time.
A long time. The esteemed Eddie Mosley. This is, what, your second time on the podcast? Is that right?
It is. Second time. And, well, you're using big words to introduce me. Esteemed. I like that.
The honorable Eddie Mosley.
It is applicable.
And as we were talking about before, I don't know if you can notice, but two of us were born and raised in the South. And one of us was not.
Never guess which two.
Yeah, you can never tell. Let me tell you a little bit about Eddie. Eddie is the pastor of disciple making. Man, that sounds serious. At Life Point Church in Smyrna, Tennessee, serving the multi-site campus since 2005. He loves to see life change happen in the lives of individuals, the church, neighborhood, and community. Is he a sought-after speaker? Are you really sought-after? Is that true?
I get a call every now and then. Yeah, I guess that's sought-after.
We all put that in our bio, but I always want to know if it's
I encourage you to seek after me to speak.
He's a sought-after speaker. He really is, actually. I'm joking, but in small group ministry, he is a guru. He's a author of Connecting in Communities, Understanding the Dynamics of Small Groups. And if you have not read that, you should go and buy that today because it's awesome. And has written numerous articles for smallgroup.com, Lifeway Church Resources, and other places. And he blogs often at eddiemosley.com. You're on Twitter and in a bunch of places. So anyways, it's great to have you, Eddie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Honored to be here. Love talking small groups and ministry, community impact.
Now, you kind of go back a little bit with Lifeway, right? And this is kind of old stomping ground for you?
It is. Looks a little different now, but spent a few years here, and then they shipped me off to Kentucky to be a church consultant for 3 years. But, yeah, Lifeway has been good to me and supporting me and encouraging me and training me in a lot of ways.
So give it about 12 months, it's going to look a lot different here.
That's what I hear.
This building will be no more. Even though I'm hearing different things, I think it's going to be adapted now. For those of you who don't know, Lifeway is moving, staying in Nashville, moving to another location. I don't know, you went to Kentucky.
I was in Kentucky. Yeah. Lifeway moved me there to work with churches, discovering what was working, what was not, and met some great pastors, great churches. It was a fun run.
If you have never met Eddie or spent time in his presence, you may not know this, but he is an impeccable dresser, and we have been known in the small group world to talk about Eddie's clothes a little bit.
You said that very nicely.
Well, I'm setting it up a little bit.
Okay. Lead in.
Okay.
But Eddie likes he's got like this button-down shirt with a nice pattern, but then you roll back the sleeve. What would you call that? What is that?
It's right? Not paisley.
No,
these are diamond shapes, I think.
Diamond shapes.
Decorative squares.
There's got to be a word for it.
Yeah.
In Kentucky, we probably didn't have that word.
No, you didn't have the shirt.
He usually has on a very bright colored pair of socks that go along with.
They are.
I wish
they could see them.
Man, we got to get this.
I was
on video.
Blending in for the wear pink in October, November.
The audio.
Yeah,
it is. He has clothes for video, but we're on audio, so that's okay. But that's all right. So Eddie, let's jump in a little bit. I know that you have been in your church for a long time, and one of the cool things about your church is that you've been able to blend a little bit of a Sunday school model and small groups and kind of make that work and transition kind of, you know, to off-campus groups. But I want to ask you, do you think it's possible for Sunday school and off-campus groups to coexist in a church and both thrive? Is that possible?
Well, I think it is. We've had success in that over the last several years. We ran out of space for Sunday school for adults. As every family joined our church, they would bring a bunch of children, seemed like, and we ran out of children's space, and in that ran out of adult workers to serve. So we had to go to something besides the 100-year-old Sunday school we'd been in. We were very old churches from that perspective, although it's called Life Point now. But we do coexist. We still have some Sunday school classes, traditional look to them. We've gone to a lot of circles rather than rows. But the principles we push for off campus as well as on campus, we try to train equally. We try to expect equally. Through our weekly reports, we're able to keep up with their communication reports. What's prayer request? What is happening in the group? What are you studying? And then who's attending? Attendance is always last for us to review, because we want the family taking care of the family rather than attendance sheets monitoring what's going on in the group. So through that, we're able to contact, whether you're off campus or on campus, and contact you concerning the weaknesses we're spotting. So I think relationship is a key over all of this is the relationship umbrella. If you don't have a relationship with your off campus or on campus leaders, it's not going to work either way. But having a relationship with both, expecting the same out of both, and then building on that has allowed us to see them coexist.
What's the balance between people that are in Sunday school and groups? Do you know that? Is it pretty balanced, or do you find that it goes one way or the other?
For our percentages?
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be about 70 off and 30 on. As far as one of them is space. If we have space on campus, we'll start groups that way. But we try to keep the new groups small compared to Sunday school classes that in the past have gotten rather large.
As you've gotten to know, and as you've been out and about, have you seen that number be fairly consistent, or is it just all over the map and it is totally dependent upon just the space that's available on campus?
I think space and culture will drive that number, and it's all over the map from what I've seen. If your pastor is big on off-campus groups and continues to talk about them, obviously they'll be fed a little bit better. If the culture of your church has been historically Sunday school and there's a lot of space, they'll meet on campus. So we've quit calling them Sunday school or small groups. We call them groups. Although we know, just like if you have 7 or 8 children, I have 2, but they're totally opposite, but they're both my children. Sunday school and small groups the same way. They operate a little different. They have a little bit different DNA maybe, but we treat them the same. They're still our groups.
And since I've known you, you guys have done the side by side. You've had both of these on and off campus groups going. So it seems like that's a conversation that has continued, but I'm not sure that I'm seeing any trends that way. And it looks like that there are some challenges with making a move. I think if you can start that way, or you can add off campus groups by necessity, but to become this hybrid model, it looks like there's some challenges there, and a lot of it has to do with culture and tradition. So, I mean, as you are in conversations, what are you hearing about the movement or this trend towards the side-by-side groups to have both or to add off-campus groups? What's working? What are the challenges? How have you seen people navigate or leaders navigate some of these challenges to find success?
I think backing up and starting, what's our purpose? Once worship service is over, what's next? What's the next step? And if you list the purposes of whatever is next, where it happens doesn't matter as much. I think a lot of us got into small groups in a traditional church thinking we're leaving Sunday school, or we're going to kill Sunday school, and we're going to move totally off campus because it seemed to be the buzzword. It seemed to be what was working.
Right.
A few months, maybe a year or two into that, we realized, wait a minute, we're just adding groups. We're not really killing one or the other. Our purpose is to get people connected in relationship for care, community, foundational Bible study, and that can happen anywhere. So if you approach it from that perspective, it saves a lot of sleepless nights, keeps your blood pressure down if you're adding small groups rather than going to small groups.
Okay, it seems like to me when I look at a Sunday school model and the off-campus model, the most natural discipline for off-campus groups is community, and one of the more natural elements of on-campus groups or Sunday school is knowledge. And a lot of it just has to do with style and, frankly, just precedent, it seems like. So how do you make sure that Sunday school classes are getting community and not just knowledge?
That goes back to our training, our expectations, the relationship of setting down with the small group leader or the Sunday school teacher. Because when we started small groups, it was about community. You're right, because Sunday school didn't have community. And now, 10 years later, we're seeing, okay, we have community. Sunday school's having community pretty good, but now we're moving into disciple-making, more intentional on disciple-making. So the way we track the Sunday school to keep them healthy, reports, relationships, I hate to use the word reports. It sounds so administrative, but there's an email that
we get. You know, there's a need. It works.
It works. Yeah. It works. And we stacked it, as I said earlier, to say what is going on in your group? What are your activities? What are you studying? What's the prayer request? Oh, and by the way, who was there? And so we don't make it an attendance sheet only. And that's been very beneficial. So I'm able to track the health just through that weekly report. But then also the relationships, getting together with four or five small group leaders, the old weekly workers meetings, if you're in traditional and older. those meetings happen in a different fashion now, but that same idea. But keeping the purposes for on or off campus groups the same and tracking those and then challenging the leaders.
How do your Sunday school classes, you don't call them Sunday school, but just for the purpose of this conversation, we'll call them Sunday school.
Right.
How do they get community? You said that they are now getting community. How do they do that?
Well, one is going from rows to circles. Our most senior Sunday school class, rows of many, many people, 60, 70 on a Sunday morning, have gone to tables. And each table is a care group. If you're old enough to experience those Sunday school training days of care group leaders, we call them table hosts in the small group world. But even that has developed community, just meeting around a table rather than in a row. Of course, what they called Sunday school socials, you know, sharing a meal or a party, being sure we're holding leaders accountable to have those events has increased the community and knowing each other.
That's good. I love the fact that you can just change the setup of the room instead of being rows, just put them in circles, and suddenly the atmosphere changes. The community happens. That's good.
And the ladies in that class would say we have a place to set our coffee and our Bible and Sunday school book. So, yeah, it's beneficial much more than they anticipated.
Dual purpose.
Yes.
Let me ask you this, and this fascinates me about your church and the culture there. Your church leadership encourages the pastors to be active in the community. I mean, that's a big deal for you guys. So what does that look like for you and maybe some of the other pastors? Just kind of speaking to, you know, we talked to a lot of small group pastors, and I think they feel like their world is right there at the church, but you guys have gone beyond that. What does that look like for you to be out in the community?
Yeah, there's advantages and disadvantages of having a very competitive staff. Monday mornings are slow to get started because of fantasy football right now. But that comes out of a culture of being involved in the sports world. We have a gym, we have 42 acres, we have a softball field on our property. And there was a time that we thought we needed to have the sports teams. And we came up with the realization that God showed us, probably opened our eyes to, the community's doing a great job with sports. So why compete with that? And so we began to train coaches how to have chapel services. Travel ball is huge now. Whatever sport you're in, there's a weekend tournament, and you want to play on Sunday, because that means you've won into the top level of the tournament. And so we fought that for a few months and realized we're not winning that battle of being away from church and participating in travel ball. So each of us really got involved in sports. I'm fortunate enough to have a son that plays baseball and loves baseball, which is what I grew up with. And being involved in those sports teams. Now, as a senior in high school, he is playing almost every day, year-round. Or working out, and so I don't get to coach in a high school level, so I got moved to the press box, and also the Boosters Club. So being involved in that and working with parents and working with families over the years has been beneficial. Our senior pastor, football coach, involved in the city leagues and coaching with other people. We even offered up our building as one of the largest buildings in our community to offer sports clinics. So if you coach soccer, baseball, football, you get to come to Life Point on a Sunday afternoon for training. So being involved in sports, whatever the season of life is, subdivision, same way, being involved in your HOA, offering the Easter egg hunts or the fireworks shows, those kind of events, get you out of the house, out of the office, involved in the community, and it will surface opportunities to minister and be in the baseball team, be a chaplain, be a counselor, and you're walking with those kids every day.
So, Chris, one of the blog posts we're going to look at in a future episode are that trend, and one of the trends is only the most engaged and curious will attend church. As church attendance becomes, it seems like to me, more optional, one of the questions that I have is, what are those contributors, right? And one of those contributors, I think, is the sports world. You know, locally we have the Titans on Sunday afternoon, but travel ball, whether it be soccer or baseball, or like I had daughters, we did gymnastics and swimming, which is not ball, of course, but just that whole universe of activities has been pushed to the weekend to such extent. So what you guys are doing is, instead of trying to fight against that and maybe shame people into not doing that, you're moving into those areas.
We are.
And the staff's leading out in that.
The staff's leading out, and it's a passion for us. I mean, it's not a strategy necessarily that we sit down and say, how can we do this? It's because we love sports. But we've seen teams, the entire teams come for a baptism, come for celebration, Christmas services, entire teams come, parents involved in that, which we wouldn't have touched a third of those had we fought it and said, you know, travel sports are not for us, stay away from them. A lot of the acquaintances and church attenders or visitors would not have found LifePoint.
That's a great example of not fighting culture, but using it for ministry.
Facilitating it even.
Yeah, facilitating it. Yeah.
And we're not belittling worship or the necessity of attending worship, but we realize that if we take a stand against it, it's probably going to eliminate some of our regular attenders.
And so you may have said this already, but just to be clear, so you are seeing this part of your ministry actually working in an outreach or evangelistic way.
Oh, very much
in the community.
Yes, yes.
And so Pat's real involved in it, but all just at all levels of the of
right.
The,
our administrator is coaching soccer. You know, one of our communications guys is coaching basketball. We have some other men that don't coach, but they serve as chapel leaders. So if your team's traveling on Sunday, he will come. One of our guys, he'll assign one of our guys to come and lead a devotional for your team.
All right. So at the risk of being a little redundant, I would ask to what extent you're seeing like group ministry in that same way. So you've got the staff that's leading it, and then how are you seeing groups become engaged in this part of LifePoint?
We're seeing more unchurched people get involved in small groups. They're already doing life together 5-6 nights a week. So we're wanting to interject the Bible and Bible study into that relationship you already have.
Okay, so you've been at LifePoint for 11 years, and then before that, we've already talked about. So you've been in ministry for how long?
A lot of years.
Yeah, a lot of years. So, the question is, how have you seen the approach to small groups and discipleship change since you started in ministry?
Well, since I started in ministry, everything had to happen at the campus. It was about how many times you were on that campus meant how mature in Christ you were. It was based on not only attendance of Sunday morning or Sunday school, but yep. other programs. So if you're there 5 nights a week and I'm only there 4, you're obviously a better Christian than I am.
I got you by 1.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, just 1. I can catch up maybe next semester. But that has changed so much, evolved into relational ministry, much more than attendance ministry. Recently, we've seen this move of disciple-making come across the nation. As I said earlier, when we started small groups, there was a huge need for community, a huge need for space and workers, obviously, but also for that community where we could hold each other accountable, where we knew each other, knew where each other lived, knew each other's kids. We didn't have that in Sunday school. So we started small groups for community. Now that we have the community, I see the next phase of small group ministry and intentional disciple making, where the gender-based groups, or even inside of your small group, 2 or 3 guys are getting together during the week and going deeper, deeper in scripture, deeper in accountability, and much more transparent. So we're taking that advantage of that community that we have, those relationships, and going deeper.
What are they using in those smaller groups?
The Bible.
Okay.
I know that's just
choose a text, and so is someone doing some preparation, or are they just starting cold, and are they working through a book, I'm assuming, or is there any guidance that the church is giving?
We start with 10 core Christian doctrines. And I didn't mean to be smart aleck on the Bible.
No.
You ask anybody on that, that's what the response is going to be. So we searched through and figured out, why do we want to do this? Why is God driving us to this? Well, there's many things, but 10 we came up with that said, we need to start here. So we have 10 core Christian doctrines that we work through first, and you need to be discipled in order to go lead a group. So we're walking through generations, if you will, of disciple makers.
We've had Robbie Gallaty on the show to talk about the triads and quads, and that's something that we're doing at our church. And I'm in I'm in a disciple-making relationship with two other men, and we've been meeting for a while. We're using Jonathan Dodson's Gospel-Centered Discipleship. So he works through the text and then the theological, the theology inherent in the text, and then application. So that's kind of, and we call it Fight Club because that's what he does, and I think it's a cool name. It's kind of like.
That's pretty tough.
Yeah,
it's manly name.
It's like the Ballad of Ricky Bobby. You know, that's a good name. It's a good
rule,
name.
Rule number one is what? Never talk about Fight Club.
You've already that's released all
name.
The information.
That's a good name. A good name. So I'm just curious because I think we're going to need more, and there's not really a lot of resources out there that can facilitate that. I think there are people that can just go to the text and have a meaningful time, but you know, I think there's a lot of people that want a little something else. So there's commentary. You
I would
can
say
always
more
choose.
People need more than just go to the text. Most people I've dealt with or run into on that need some kind of guidance, and we've provided that to start out with, and then they, depending on what doctrine they struggle with, they go deeper into more resources for that. I think depending on your disciplees as well, mm-hmm. those people in my group, my adult small group, we've had the pleasure of seeing half of them baptized in the last 3 years. So they're beginners in Christ. And so just to say, grab the Bible and let's sit down and start talking, I mean, they're going to be bewildered. And so disciples path, something that's stage driven, is also a great process to walk through, so that you're all pulling and coming to the table with some of the same information, some of the research, some of the same time with God and His Word, so you can have common conversation.
Yeah, guys, I'll tell you a little bit about what we're seeing is the topical study is not as popular as it once was.
Yeah.
You know, this idea of a facet of life, I think you get to that through the text and the theology, and then you get the life application. So I'm seeing more, I don't know if it's an apologetic or it's a trend in our culture. When you look at just beyond our walls, what we're seeing and what's happening out there, it seems like people want to know what's true first. And that's the launching point in a lot of these conversations that I find myself in and that I hear from the group's community.
I think there's definitely a desire for that. And I hesitate to say deep because you know that
it's
has so many
relative terms.
It's a relative term. Yeah. But to go beyond just the surface knowledge of each other and surface knowledge of Scripture and who God is. Because I think that for the most part that's what our groups do. And there is a place for that. I think, you know, we talked in another episode with Ken Braddy about the evangelistic piece of groups. And so I think there is you know, you definitely want to start there, but you don't want to stay there. And yeah. I think I'm seeing that trend a lot.
You absolutely have to have life application. And I don't think anyone here is suggesting that you don't, but anymore, I think there was a time when that was the beginning and the end. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's the case anymore. Yeah. You know, Eddie, you referenced the disciples' path, and I think that's a good example. That's heavy into the foundations. If you're talking about, well, there's six of them, but I assume you're talking about the beginning, which is kind of. Well, it runs the gamut, but it's kind of, it just hits you. I remember one of the chapters in that is what just happened. And I think that's a good beginning point. So this is your new identity. This is what transformation looks like. So, yeah.
It's good. Eddie, one more question for you. You and I teach something together called Group Essentials, and it's kind of the basics of leading a small groups ministry. And we do a few of those a year and actually have one coming up next year in February. But in kind of thinking through that lens of the brand new small group point person, I get emails almost every week from somebody, you know, I've just taken over a small group ministry. I don't know what to do. What would be the best advice that you could give to a brand new small group point person? Where do they start? What should they do first?
Well, attend essentials.
Good.
That's good.
And if you'd like to, email me, chris.surratt, S-U-R-R-A-T-T, at lifeway.com, and I'll send you an invite.
That'd be perfect. Networking, if I could house all that in one word. When I got into that role you're talking about, we need you to be small group pastor. I knew nothing, but I knew I was the pastor. That meant I was it, and it was all on me. In my own power, my own knowledge, my own sales pitch, I've got to make this happen. And it didn't take long for burnout. Fear, sleepless nights of what am I doing? And I was encouraged to network. And I do that weekly. most Thursdays is networking day of learning from other churches, talking to other people that have blazed the trail ahead of me or are in the same boat I am, but trying different stuff. And so having conversations and learning from others constantly, however you network, go ahead and make the call. The worst they can say is we won't take that call. Shoot an email. You may not get a reply back from some people, but shoot a bunch of emails out and say, hey, I need help with this. And it begins to open up your worldview of small group ministry. It doesn't allow you to be isolated in that office. And then, man, you get to share ideas and learn from some of the sharpest people in the nation.
I did the same thing when I started in the kind of small group ministry world, and I reached out to some names that I didn't expect that they would even, you know, return my email or call, and they all did. Every single one of them did, and they were some of the biggest names out there. And so I think that's great advice. And read the books. There's just so many books out there that people like Eddie and Steve Gladden and Bill Willits and just
Chris Surratt.
It's an okay book. Bill Donahue. I mean, the guys
great cover
that have set the pace. They put it down in a book. So read them. Read all of them.
I want to commend them on listening to this podcast. That's one of those stretching the marker, learning and hearing from others. And so that's a great start, but continue the networking process, continue learning and contacting. I've heard of people, and I have not done this, read a book and contact that author. I didn't start that way. I started through relationships and that 6 degrees of separation. And who do you know that I need to know? And started sharing that load. So that's a huge part of it, I think.
Yep. And if you come to the Essentials, you will actually get Eddie Mosley's cell phone number. I won't give it out now, but I'm just telling you, if you come to the Essentials, you will get his. I don't know that he answers phone calls or texts because
I'll sell it.
He's kind of old. I don't know, but you can at least get the number.
And I learned that from Steve Gladden, though, his first conference.
He did the same thing. He
writes his phone number on the whiteboard. So.
Yep.
Eddie, thanks for being with us. Always a pleasure. I am sure this is not the last time that you will be appearing, or not appearing, but being a co-host.
Hopefully next time we can have him appear, because we need people to see Eddie's clothes.
That is correct.
Well, you Instagrammed it out, right?
I will, yes.
Ooh, that's the way to do it.
EddieMosley.com, EddieMosley.com, and Twitter, @EddieMosley. You might want to look him up if you're not already following him. He is a great guy to know. Eddie, thanks so much. And as always, we are sponsored by smallgroup.com.
Smallgroup.com, online database of over 2,000 customizable Bible studies that you can use for your groups and customize it for your context and your ministry. So check it out, smallgroup.com, 2 weeks free. It will absolutely revolutionize your discipleship ministry, and that's not overstating it.
And I'm sorry, but did you say 2,000?
Over 2,000.
Over?
Over.
Over 2,000.
Eddie Mosley is a smallgroup.com user.
Hey, thanks again for being with us. We would like to also thank our producer, without whom this would not be possible, Drew Porterfield. Look forward to being with you again. Looking forward to episode 36.